Hi, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Inside Secrets of the Caribbean. My name is Rhea. I am your host. And today I'm very pleased to welcome Eric DeWicke. How are you?
Hey, Rhea, how are you?
Good, thank you. Now, I gotta say, if there is anybody that I have ever had the pleasure of interviewing that has a resume that is a mile long within the maritime industry, it is you. You have seen it, you have been it, you have done it. U.S. Coast Guard, merchant marine career, creating the first private maritime college in America, former member of the United Nations World Maritime University's Board of Governors, former executive governor of WMU, lead delegate at the UN's International Maritime Organization, and head of the Northeast Maritime Institute, and there's more. So, you know, with that kind of background, I'm just going to hand it over to you and say, tell me your story.
Well, first and foremost, I'm just a simple sailor. I think that's that needs to be established right away. You know, I call myself the Forrest Gump of the maritime industry. And I wake up in these scenes and wonder, how the hell did I get here? Just my life's been incredible, and really incredible because of my Coast Guard career. I really owe everything in my professional life to the United States Coast Guard. It's an organization that takes care of their people and the public at large. Whenever somebody's in need, the Coast Guard is the first one there in our world, and specifically not only in the United States, but in the greater Caribbean region as well. And, you know, I've had an interesting career. I started my Coast Guard career. Raised my right hand to join the Coast Guard Reserve in high school. I was 16 years old. And I was a late bloomer, so I was prepubescent even. And in boot camp, I would get in trouble because I hadn't shaved. And I said, well, what am I going to shave? And, you know, peach fuzz. There's peach fuzz there. And I didn't even have peach fuzz. But, you know, the reality is, from a professional standpoint, if you look at my resume, it is all effectuated by my Coast Guard relationships and my experience and the integrity and the values that the United States Coast Guard brings towards humanitarian events around the world, and as it is today. And so again, you know, I would wake up in these scenes and feel like, you know, gosh, how did I get here? You know, and just, you know, in my mind, I'm this goofy little kid that would go iceberging in the winters, you know, doing stupid things. And if I fell in, I would have drowned and all that stuff. And we grew up as, you know, what we call a Huck Finn life here in Fairhaven, Massachusetts. And, you know, and the Coast Guard kind of dusted me off and polished me up. And, you know, really, I just owe everything to the Coast Guard. And I think the reason I put so much effort into my professional career is a way to say thank you. And you know, the kind of the second level of thank you is when I got to sail in the Merchant Marine. I found merchant mariners to be the salt of the earth, most beautiful people, smart, intelligent, clever, hardest working people I've ever met in my life, in values and integrity, even more so than the Coast Guard. These people, you know, 22 people running a ship that is 3 or 4 football fields long. You have to work as a team, and you have to trust one another and care about one another, and really have values that epitomize what society claims they have. They really do it on in this little community called the ship. And that's really why I started Northeast Maritime Institute, is to create a merchant mariner school, you know, for people that need opportunity, because it's such a great way to succeed in life, really amazing paying jobs. And, You know, I started this back in, you know, we bought it. It had been in existence since 1981, but my wife and I bought this school in 1995. And we really turned it from it wasn't a school. You basically came here to prepare for examinations. And my wife and I turned it into a maritime education and training facility. And within 3 years, it became the largest in the U.S. And just based on the heart and soul that we put into it and the care and compassion, the way we delivered education and curriculum for people that might have struggled academically and, you know, their youth, we created a new paradigm in how education was delivered, and with zero humility and just compassion-driven education. And it was the most, I think, effective way for me to say thank you to those merchant mariners who really did, I feel, raised me in my adult formative years to really become an adult that I could look myself in the mirror and think, you know, there's a good guy there. And these guys who are the salt of the earth, guys and ladies, you know, honestly, they were just amazing. And I learned things from them that I didn't learn in church. I didn't learn in playing football in college. I didn't learn in high school. I didn't learn in the Coast Guard, quite honestly. It was a raw energy that, you know, there wasn't time for debate. You did what you did and you worked hard. And, you know, we created, you know, the three tenets of success that I figured out in the Merchant Marine were honesty. And that's not cash register honesty. That's just gut level honesty, knowing who you are as a human being, integrity, saying what you do and then doing what you say, never create a false promise, either professionally or personally. And then work ethic. I think work ethic was something I learned at sea on merchant vessels. That doesn't compare with anything I learned, even on a nationally ranked football team. And, you know, I worked hard there, but it didn't come close to how hard I had to work in the Merchant Marine. And you know, these guys, they were just amazing. You know, they'd give you a hug when you needed it and give you a good swift kick in the rear end when you needed it. And it was just, they became your family, and they taught me those values and what I call the three tenets of success in what we adopt to teach our students who come from all walks of life. It's a really great school that is diverse as can be. So, yeah.
I think, you know, honestly, mariners tend to get forgotten a lot. You see many stories straight across the face of the planet in the fact that, you know, they'll be on big ships and they'll be delivering their goods wherever. And for some reason, the boat, you know, even in the last couple of days, I've seen more stories where, you know, crew is stuck on board a massive ship and they can't get off. Now, without mariners braving the seas, there's piracy, there's all sorts of things that go on and dangerous, dangerous situations. Without them, we wouldn't have things as simple as the fruit that we put in the fruit bowl on the kitchen table.
And wouldn't have a toothbrush to yeah, brush your teeth with. Yeah.
But nobody really thinks that far. They just go to the grocery store and get whatever they want, or they go to the shop and get whatever they want. But not a thought goes into those mariners that are out there literally putting their lives on the line in order for us to live the lives that we live.
Yep. You know, I just gave a speech at the UN's International Labor Organization on Tuesday. And boy, did I ruffle some feathers. And they have created the Maritime Labor Convention, you know, supposedly taking care of the rights of seafarers. Yeah. And it's a bridge that is built at 85%. Well, you know, that's great. It's well intended, and nobody's doing it, you know, for nefarious reasons, but a bridge unfinished is unusable. And so the fact that we have so many crew abandoned, so many crew not allowed to get paid, the fact that coastal states that these crews are actually delivering goods and services to are failing to recognize how important they are to humanity is a global sin. And we have a lot to be ashamed of, and we're not doing enough to facilitate a comprehensive knowledge as to how important seafarers are. There's a movement right now to create autonomous vessels, for example, you know, always removing the human element from whatever it is, right? Well, that's a terrorist, excuse the term, but wet dream, right? And these idiots that are talking about autonomous vessels, you know, they're in trouble, because any hacker can hack into any digital system. I don't care who you are, what firewall you think you can create. You know, this is a dream for terrorists and basically rogue nations. And, you know, I'm flat out tired of the ignorance and the lack of empathy that we as a global society have on the importance of mariners. We need to do a better job. And that's why, you know, I'm here interviewing with you to tell these stories and other people. It is important that we start to recognize and create tools that protect these people and really enshrine them as important catalysts of our society. And, until we do that, we're in trouble, you know, but we're starting, and you got to start somewhere. And if I have to put every last cent that I own into this effort, I will. And
well, I have to say, what really brought it to my attention, and I mean, I have been watching it for a while and sort of being advised of news stories, etc. But during COVID times, that really brought it to attention, because these guys were stranded all over the world. No country was willing to pick them up. They were stuck in the middle of the ocean. Some of them, I mean, even to this very day, just a couple of days ago, I saw a story where a gentleman is actually the captain, is the last person on board. And he literally has to swim from where his ship is to land to get water and food, and then swim back because he's not allowed to be there. And he has to stay with the boat because he is the captain, and there's all sorts of laws in between. And he's been there alone for over a year.
Yeah.
Like, this is, if we were talking governments taking prisoners and doing what they're doing to these mariners, that would be criminal.
So they are violating the Geneva Convention. All these coastal states, including the United States, by the way, now the United States has figured out that they need to facilitate repatriation of seafarers, and they're doing a good job. But the previous administration basically ignored them, turned their backs on them for, you know, we all know the elephant in the room with the previous administration. You know, they're a bunch of bigots and racists and didn't care about anybody. And finally, we have a president back in office in the United States that actually cares about people and is facilitating this effort. But the rest of the world needs to follow suit. Australia is doing a great job. Singapore is taking the lead. Very proud of Singapore and my friends in Singapore for facilitating repatriation of seafarers and mariners. They're doing an outstanding job. And again, Singapore being a major maritime state, even though they're small, they do a damn good job of really facilitating human rights for mariners.
And, do you think part of this problem is race, for the simple fact that a large population of the mariners happen to be Asian or from the Philippines, you know, from non-majority countries, as it were?
But the short answer? The short answer is yes, of course. Yeah. And it's sad. And you know, again, America has been struggling with its own race issues, but you know, we're finding ourselves, I think, finally turning the corner, getting better. You know, there's these periods in American history where we get better and better and better and better. That racism really extends from European traditions. And, you know, we find ourselves, you know, in the United States and Canada and even South and Central America having these issues that we deal with. Caste systems anywhere, whether it be India or the Philippines or Vietnam, or any labor providing nation, they need to be eliminated. You know, we need to look at all human beings as important to our survival as a human race. And, you know, that we've got to stop looking at color. We've got to stop looking at religion. We've got to stop looking at all these little identifiers that separate us and find the things that, that bind us. I have a cliche, and we even did a documentary using this title. My cliche is "The Ocean Knows No Borders." And the documentary is about the woman captain in Tonga who crashed the glass ceiling there. You know, we need to figure out that in the case of mariners and seafarers, the ocean knows no borders. And these are the people that take care of all nations. And I am proud of the United States right now for turning this corner, especially this week is an important step in U.S. history with, you know, George Floyd's murderer being charged fully. And, you know, the fact that we have legislation pending that will really put some teeth into human rights and equal rights, not only for people of color, but people of different genders, of different sexuality, of different religions. And, you know, this is what we need to strive for as a globe. And, you know, to kick it back to John Lennon, imagine, you know, it really life needs to start being looked at as to how we survive as a human race globally. Because the globe is shrinking so rapidly. So, and the maritime industry is the really penultimate in the penultimate position. It's the second to the last platform that I think transitions us into a better human race.
Well, you know, one thing that I find about, the industry of not only mariners, but yachting and boating is that I still think it is about 20 years behind the rest of the world in racism, period. You know, you see those ideals and you still see almost segregation on docks around the world. And that's a sad thing to say when you're looking at 2021.
Yeah, I would argue maybe so in yachting. You don't see it as intensely in commercial shipping. Yeah. It's softer there. And what people don't understand is the whaling industry, which my mother's family ran half of the whaling fleet out of New Bedford, during the Moby Dick era. You know, honestly was the first industry in the West to be integrated. And so when you think about the fact that people, the Quakers ran the whaling industry, and the Quakers, their religious beliefs are based on tolerance, right? First and foremost. And so the idea that people of all religions, all races, all colors, all creeds worked, lived, ate in the same spaces is just amazing. And honestly, we took those principles and designed it in the construct of Northeast Maritime as well, you know, on how we take care of our students, how we recruit our students, how they work together, how they're all responsible for cleaning the buildings, for example. We don't have cleaning support or cleaning personnel. It's us, the faculty, the administration, the staff, and the students. And we all do this together to show that not one of us is more important than the other, including me. I clean the toilets every day at 3 o'clock, just to show that, you know, if I can do it, you guys can do it. And remember that to be kind to people and humble to people. And so, you know, the idea that we are an industry that is a little bit softer there, you know, you hope it transitions into other aspects of the industry, such as yachting. So hopefully that becomes more of a reality. And the fun thing for me is a lot of my Bermuda students, for example, you know, African descent, are working as captains and mates on yachts. And that's been a lot of fun for me to see, because these kids are thriving. They're doing really well in an industry that hasn't been so open.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, going forward, I think the only way that we can ever make a change is to have those conversations and to make sure that those conversations don't stop, because if it is swept under the rug, nobody will ever be uncomfortable enough to make that
exactly change. Exactly. No, it's you know, John Lewis here, famous congressman in the United States, said, "Let's make some trouble, but good trouble." Right? Like, yeah, we've got to create a little bit of uncomfortability for us to augment change, and I think that's a wise and judicious form of you know, becoming an agent for change.
Well, that's what we aim to do here. And nice. Hopefully that will continue on well into the future, because I myself have three children, and I look at the world that we have right now, and I think this is no world that I want to leave them.
Yeah. Well, I'm an optimist.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, I've got children that are 25, 23, and 20, and they are much better people than I am.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I think the next generation is probably the last generation that is so closed-minded. And I think we're seeing fissures in the old system that, you know, humanity will prevail. I am totally confident of that. I always tell everybody, even during the darkest days of my life, which were, you know, the Trump administration here in the United States, and just as ugly as it gets, I would tell everybody, you know, guys, light always penetrates the dark, and it's not going to last forever. And sure as heck that happened, and his tenure didn't last very long. So that's the good news. So it means people are truly, I think, good by nature. Yeah. There's always that percentage that are not. I would even argue that those ugly people in history probably had some good in them. They just didn't tap into it. So let's hope for the good.
Well, you know what? I'm going to end it there, because I always like to end things on a good note. And I really do believe that there is a generation coming up after us that is going to make some major changes that need to be made. And you know, they'll learn from our mistakes.
Nice.
Once again, you have been watching Eric. He is the head of the Northeast Maritime Institute in the US of A. We will provide all of his information below this interview when it airs, so that if you want to get in touch, or if you're interested in a career in the maritime industry, well, you know where to go now. So thank you, Eric.
Thank you, Rhea. And to everybody, keep the faith.
Wonderful. You've been watching another issue of Inside the Secrets of the Caribbean. My name is Rhea. I have been your host. We'll see you again next week.